Hello, fellow Earth folks. I'm Annie Gigg, GYG, here on CFRU 93.3 FM and CFRU.ca, available wherever you are in the world. Warm welcome to Better Me, Better World, the show for growth-minded change makers, difference makers, and happiness makers. In the previous episode, we listened in on the fact-based time warp conversation between Annie Younger, a.k.a. Annie Y, at age 25 in the year 1980, and Annie Older, a.k.a. Annie O, 35 or more years later. The continuing true story conversation is all about getting to the bottom of things using the power of inquiry. You're invited to keep on being a fly on the wall. Annie Y, the last time we talked, you asked, how will you come to use your imagination and daydreaming as a catalyst for transformation? You know why I love it? Because I believe humanity, with all its pressing issues, needs to learn how to tap into its collective imagination and daydreaming to transform itself. And we, you and I, make up the collective Annie Y. So if everybody was to ask the same question you just asked, it would be a great start to humanity's transformation. Oh, that's pretty heavy stuff, Annie O. What are you talking about? The amazing thing about personal life transformation, Annie Y, is that by changing ourselves, we cannot help but change the world. Actually saying changing ourselves is misleading. I should say by becoming ourselves, we cannot help but change the world. It's a win-win thing. You become who you want to be, who you're meant to be, not who someone else or society wants you to be. And you find fulfillment and purpose and meaning in your life, which feels like falling head over heels in love with life. I'm talking from personal experience here. And when you're manifesting your genuine, unique self, you're feeling so damn good. You're happy and at peace, and you can't help but spread that throughout your sphere of influence, whether big or small. To this point, I received the loveliest comment the other day from a coworker in an email message. What's an email message? Sorry, I keep forgetting, Annie Y, that you're living in a pre-computer era. For the time being, let's just say an email message is a note that's typed by using something like a typewriter, but instead of typing onto paper, you type onto something like a television screen that's attached to the keyboard, and then when you're done typing your message, you hit a send button, and your message is sent through cyberspace and shows up on the TV-like screen of the person's computer that you're sending it to. Email is short for electronic mail. Through cyberspace? People have their own computers? Okay, there's a lot of explaining to do around this. Can we come back to it another time? Yeah, sorry for the interruption, Annie O. Can't wait to hear about this science fiction-y future world you live in, though. You were saying a coworker sent you a lovely comment in an email message? Yes, she said, "It's always a pleasure working with me, and I epitomize what every employee should strive to be. Other co-workers have told me I have a real skill at bringing calm to heated situations." This isn't to brag, Annie Y. I bring up these comments only as real examples of what I'm saying about positively impacting one's sphere of influence. I didn't set out saying to myself, I want to be a role model in the office. I started down the path of becoming my real, unencumbered self. And while in the process of enjoying personal rewards from this journey, I've also been a positive influence on my environment. That's how humanity transforms, Annie Y, one human at a time. It's the only way. I see what you're saying. You might say humanity is like the human body. My body is made up of a bajillion cells. If those individual cells are healthy, then I'm healthy. If my cells aren't healthy, there's no way I, as a whole, can be healthy. Human wellness has us to start at the cellular level. Humanity's wellness has to start at the person level. Well said, Annie Y. I like your analogy. However, we strayed away from our discussion about how we can use our imagination and daydreaming as a catalyst for transformation. But I think this conversation has been a good preamble because it's so important to understand how each person's transformation from inauthenticity to genuineness, from suppression to release of potential, is so valuable to the quality of your life and others around you. Before we get back to our initial topic of discussion, I want to share a quote by Michelangelo that, to my mind, summarizes what I've been talking about regarding personal transformation being the only way to transform humanity. He said, "I saw the angel in the marble and carved until I set him free." Annie Y., this hurting world more than ever before needs angels. And these angels are all around us. Too many of them, though, are trapped in the marble of their limiting self-beliefs, self-doubts, and lack of self-awareness and self-confidence. Imagination and daydreaming are a prerequisite for carving away the marble. How do you mean, Annie O., that imagination and daydreaming are prerequisites for carving away the marble? It's so unfortunate, Annie Y., that so many of us are prisoners of how we think of ourselves, how we think we ought to be. As we talked earlier on, each of us is the sum total of the genes we've inherited plus all the things we've experienced in life up to the present moment. Those things we've experienced are filtered out through our culture, our societal norms, our family, our religion, our education system, our natural environment, our friendships, our work, and so on. All those filters mean only certain sanctioned messages get through to us. They're the messages that tell us how to think and behave in ways that are acceptable to our specific culture, society, religion, etc. Think of it this way. You're a young Caucasian woman living in Canada in the early 1980s. You were raised in a Christian family in a faith-based rural community. You're heterosexual and married to a white Christian man you know you're going to have kids with. You never thought much about your life situation because in these respects, you fit pretty comfortably into the mold you were born and raised in. Now, let's imagine another woman with children, but otherwise in the same mold you're in with regard to culture, religion, family, etc. This woman, however, is surviving on antidepressant medication while guiltily trying to suppress her imaginings of herself in a physical relationship with a certain woman. They're sinful thoughts, after all, and she's feeling ashamed, playing the mother role because she doesn't love motherhood. And while captivated by the idea of being an architect for iconic structures, she regularly reminds herself that that dream is way out of her reach. But she knows she'd be really good at it. That woman is trying hard to ignore her imagination and dreams wherein lies her real self, isn't she, Annie O? She thinks she needs to repress those things because of what she's learned and she's making herself sick over it. Who knows, maybe her trying to be what she's not is depriving the world of beautiful buildings and herself of love, even if it's a deliberately blatant example, Annie Y. And to flesh out the example even farther, as a little girl, this woman loved building sandcastles at the beach, always uniquely and creatively designed. She'd spend hours the day before, lost in drawing pictures of the castles she'd build. In high school, she'd wished she could have taken woodworking with the boys instead of home economics she had to take to prepare for wifehood. It's obvious, isn't it, Annie O? If she was lost in flow, as you've called it before, drawing her pictures, then she was impassioned with that. And the fact that she wanted to do woodworking with the boys, the signs were there all along, weren't they? But I can understand how she'd be pulled along by the societal current, stuck in the mainstream. If I was her, I'm not sure I'd have the courage or the strength to try to fight the current. I don't know how far afield I'd have to go to look to find a woman architect. Heck, as you know, Annie O., there are hardly any women in our home community who don't get married after school, settle down, and have kids. Some might continue to work outside the house, but not many. But as for homosexuality, I don't know what to think about that. It's not right. It is a sin. So maybe your theoretical woman is doing the right thing by keeping that part of herself suppressed. Maybe she needs to learn how to overcome the immoral urges. Oh, until this moment, I'd quite forgotten how much my thinking has evolved over the years. Annie Y., for the purposes of this discussion, are you able to suspend your judgment on the morality of homosexuality? You're scaring me, Annie O. Sometime back in our conversation, you hinted that my spirituality is going to change, and now you're suggesting that my thinking around this moral issue is also going to change? What am I becoming? Who are you? I know what's right and wrong. You used to know. Have you gotten? Have you forgotten? Will I forget all that? Doesn't it matter to you anymore? Whoa, hang on, Annie Y. We'll get to that later. Remember I said earlier on something to the effect that an evolving way of thinking doesn't mean that you cast off what you believed before as no longer relevant. We are continuously morphing composites of everything that has been in our mind from the get-go to the present moment. Nothing in nature is static, including our mind. I'm still uncomfortable with this, but for the sake of continuing our conversation, I'll let it go. Please go on. Thanks, Annie Y., for agreeing to suspend your judgment on the morality of homosexuality for the sake of our discussion. Now, where was I? Oh, yeah. You were seeing how the signs were there all along in the woman's fantasies and imaginings, pointing to the fact that she was a lesbian with a keen interest to become an architect. But it was too daunting for her to fight the societal and religious currents in the mainstream, so she denied herself her passion on both fronts in favor of societal and religious expectations. And her denial, her suppressing, was stressing her to the point of sickness, mentally, emotionally, and physically. Do you remember, Annie Y., as a kid? In the lake, when you and brothers Paul and Sean would challenge each other to push beach balls as far as possible below the surface of the water, how it took a heck of a lot of energy to keep your ball submerged. The further down you pushed it, the tougher it became to hold it down. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that, Annie-O, but now that you've reminded me, it was great fun seeing how high the beach balls would pop up after you released the pressure. I could always beat my weakling little brothers. Hey, don't forget we are 2 and 3 years older than them. But the point I'm getting at is that it takes a lot of energy for us to suppress our real selves. We only have so much energy at our disposal. If we have nothing to hold down, nothing to deny or suppress, think of the energy that's freed up for us to develop to our real potential. The experiences of this hypothetical woman may be more blatant than is often the case, but very often people do not live as their authentic self. Early on, we may not be able to identify exactly how we're being inauthentic because the messages or directives we take away from our life circumstances starting at the time we're in utero becomes very deeply ingrained. The limits within which we must act are so well defined and familiar, we don't think to challenge them. We try to make our unique shape fit into a life circumstance that isn't a fit for us, so we feel like a square peg in a round hole. That's it, Annie. Oh, that's how I feel almost all the time. As long as I can remember, that's how I felt, and I've always wondered what's wrong with me. But it sounds like from this conversation, I don't find my round hole for some time yet in my life. Do I, 30 years from now, feel like life is a fit? It's fitting much better, Annie Y. Remember, as I've said before, we are always, our whole life through, a work in progress. So now, another way of thinking of that is life starts to fit better and better as self-awareness grows. As you morph from who you think you're supposed to be to whom you were born to be, you start feeling like you're coming into your element. If those beach balls you were holding underwater had feelings, imagine what they'd be experiencing as they were rushing up to their element, the air. That's what you're going to experience as you rise up from the oppression of your limiting self-beliefs and beliefs others have about you, as you become enlightened, pun intended. Just doesn't happen quite as fast. I get it, Annie O, but here I am getting ever closer to 30 and I don't even know who my authentic self is. How do I know where I belong? What self-limiting beliefs I should be getting rid of if I don't know my real shape, going back to the peg in the hole thing? Excellent question, my dear. Remember how I said some time back that life continuously presents us with ahas that bring us enlightenment, heightened awareness? Well, there are occurrences that I refer to as near life experiences in which we can look to find ahas that reveal our authentic self. Let me explain. We've been talking about finding our real self because only when we've made that discovery can we feel comfortable in our own skin, no matter where we are or what we're doing. When we get there, there's no longer a need for pretense and we stop worrying about what others think of us. And in finding ourselves, we find our life purpose. It's very liberating. Before I delve into NLEs, that's the lazy way to refer to near-life experiences, there's something I want to ask you, Annie Y. Fire away. Do you remember the little ditty I wrote, I think, 2 or 3 years back from where you are now? I have it in my scrapbook. It goes, "As far as you must reach upward to touch the evening star, so must you reach inward to know who you really are." Yeah, for sure. That's another example of not necessarily understanding what I've written. I had a feeling when I wrote it that someday it would become clear, and I'm guessing you're going to do the clarifying now. Yepper. That reach inwards is what I'm going to talk about right now. And here is a T.S. Eliot quote that complements our little poem, at least based on my interpretation of it. He says, "We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time." What that means to me is that with ongoing self-discovery, we unearth the person we were at the very beginning of our life, our real life, our real self, unencumbered by the limiting beliefs imposed on ourselves, or by others. And for the first time, we come to know who we really are. And the best place to discover our real self is in our NLEs. Okay, so what exactly are NLEs? I believe you heard the term peak experience, right? Yeah, remember that friend who used that term when I was describing to him that one summer night when I was sitting in the light of the full moon on the patio just outside the sliding doors, watching it rise above the forest, and I felt as if I was in paradise with no concerns or distractions or anxiety, totally immersed in my surroundings, a part of it all, not just seeing it. He'd said that was another description of being in flow or in the zone. You got it, Annie Y. Flow is described as the mental state of operation in which a person performing an activity is fully immersed in a feeling of energized focus, is fully involved in finding enjoyment in the process of the activity. In essence, flow is characterized by complete absorption in what one does. I took that from Wikipedia. Wiki what? Never mind, that's another future thing I'll explain later. For now, just think of it as a dictionary. Wikipedia goes on to say, "Flow is completely focused motivation. It is a single-minded immersion and represents perhaps the ultimate experience in harnessing the emotions in the service of performing and learning. In flow, the emotions are not just contained and channeled, but positive, energized, and aligned with the task at hand. The hallmark of flow is a feeling of spontaneous joy, even rapture, while performing a task, although flow is also described as a deep focus on nothing but the activity, not even oneself or one's emotions." And so are you saying, Annie O, that what you call NLEs are the same as having a peak experience or being in flow or in the zone? Yes, precisely. I call them near-life experiences as kind of a play on the term near-death experience. You know that term? It was really just coined about 10 years before where you're at now. But there's been a lot written on near-death experience in recent years. Very generally, it's a powerfully positive experience described by people who have been on the brink of death. Say, while in surgery or something like that, they seem to get a glimpse of a bright and beautiful world that lies on the other side. But then they're pulled back into their life, which is forever changed for the better. Yes, I have heard of them. Very fascinating. Well, near-life experiences are those times when you're in flow or in the zone and you're feeling nearly at the peak of life. You'd like the experience to last forever, but then something pulls you out of the experience. It ends, and life returns to normal. When you investigate your near-life experiences, you begin to understand the narrative they're telling. It's the story of you. That sounds so cool. So how do you get to the narrative? So anyway, you ask, how do you write your Enlin, your near life experiences narrative? Did you notice that my pronunciation, Enlin, of the acronym I use for near life experiences narratives, rhymes with gremlin? Well, Annie, now that you pointed out, yes. I wanted to make a point of it because, as you'll come to see, gremlins are the antagonists of your Enlin. You know what gremlins are, right? Actually, no. Oh, once again, I forgot. The movie called Gremlins won't come out for another few years yet from where you're at. You'll enjoy it, though, when you see it. I don't want to spoil the movie for you, so suffice it to say that gremlins are malevolently mischievous monsters causing destruction in people's lives. Okay. In the context of your Enlin, they're the things that destroy your self-confidence and self-esteem. They disempower you. We'll get into that more in a bit. Right now, I'll try to explain how you write your Enlin. As I said earlier, an NLE, near life experience, is when you're in flow, in the zone. You're so caught up with what you're doing, you're unaware of the passage of time or what's going on around you. Each NLE holds a clue as to what it is that makes you feel nearest to experiencing life at its fullest, without the help of mind-altering substances. The first step in writing your narrative involves identifying such occasions without making any inferences about them. So, do you start back early in life and work your way up to the present when recording these occasions, Annie O? No, not necessarily. There's no one right way of recalling NLEs. It may be helpful to chunk down your search for NLEs by focusing your attention on one phase or period of your life at a time, starting at the present and working backwards or vice versa. Or perhaps it will work better for you to let the NLEs randomly rise to the surface of your consciousness from whenever in your life. It may have happened at play, at school, at work. An NLE may be blatant or subtle, of short or protracted duration. Don't attempt to force the NLEs up out of memory. Invite them to surface as they will. When an NLE comes to mind, record it on your tablet, in a scrapbook, or on a sticky note. My tablet? Never mind. Yet another futuristic science fiction-like device, as you call them. Anyway, in your note-taking, firstly, briefly describe what the NLE was, and secondly, how you felt while experiencing it. At what age in your life you had the NLE is not critical. Take as much time as needed until you feel satisfied with your capture. It may take a few days or even weeks. The NLEs may arise in a flurry or intermittently. Can you give me an example? Sure. What always comes to mind was that time you were skating alone on a frozen pond in the field behind the house, performing what was to my, I don't know exactly, say 10-year-old mind, a perfectly choreographed ice skating routine. I did the routine over and over for my imaginary audience until I suddenly realized mid-afternoon had given away to dusk. I remember that so clearly, Annie O. The sun had set and I hadn't even noticed it going down. It was such a shocking feeling coming back to reality. I remember feeling so energized, by delivering those beautiful performances to my adoring audience filling the arena. I was sad when it ended. Exactly. Can you think of another experience that stuck with you because of the sensation you experienced? Okay, let me think. Okay. Here's something from just a few years ago in university. I used to spend way too much time in the lab for my university cartography course producing maps. I loved map making. The challenge of creating by hand the most effective, useful, professional-looking maps possible. Same thing. Hours would go by before I'd even realize it. Yepper, I certainly recall that. And what were you feeling in that situation? Well, you obviously know, Annie O, greatly satisfied. Here I was creating practical things of art that would help people. So that's essentially all that's required in capturing NLEs. You note the experience and what you were feeling in the moment. That's kind of fun, but what's next? What's the narrative part? Ding! Our time's up again, unfortunately. We'll get into talking about writing near-life experience narratives next time, Annie Y. Catch you then. Bye-bye. Flies on the wall, I invite you to continue to listen in on the self-discovery conversation between Annie Younger and Annie Older by tuning in to the next episode of Better Me, Better World. I'll be back same time next week, same place here at CFRU 93.3 FM or CFRU.ca. The shows are recorded, so alternatively, have a listen when it works best for you. Until next time, be you. I'm Annie Gigg.